You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trojan welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, the award-winning playwright Geraldine Aron delivers her now refreshed and updated international comedy hit, My Brilliant Divorce, at the Theatre on the Bay. It's just opened. It runs until the 16th of November. And it's described as a brilliantly observed one-woman play, starring the inimitable Kate Normington, and is also described as a tour de force performance, exploring the tragically comic world of the newly divorced, tracking one woman's three-year path through a pending divorce after 20 years or so of marriage. And also, as we'll discover, it's a story richly populated by multiple characters, all played by Normington. And there's a stuffed dog involved. Kate, welcome.
Thank you so much, Rodney. That was quite a mouthful, but you got through it absolutely brilliantly.
I was very nervous, but with you sitting here.
Oh, no.
You've just come down from Johannesburg. You've just had the run up there, haven't you?
Yes, yes. And
was it any good?
A great deal of fun it was as well. It was a baptism by fire, I can tell you that. We opened at the Monte Cassino Theatre. With a wonderful audience who kind of flung me into it and cheered my spirit because I thought, oh, wow, they're actually going to laugh at this, you know.
Yeah.
And thereafter, you know, I think first runs in cities are often, you know, where you cut your teeth on the piece, you know, and I sort of learned some major lessons through the run, but it was great. And you kind of finesse it along the way.
Sure. So in fact, we're lucky here in Cape Town. We're seeing the final finessed product.
Well, let's go with that. Yes. Okay.
But when you said you gave me the impression, so what I was going to ask you is doing a one woman show, a little bit sort of traumatic. I'm not sure that's the right word.
Yeah, it's energy demanding and focus demanding. And I haven't done it for, I think the last one-woman show I did was something called Bombshells, also about 14-odd years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's strange because when we did Mamma Mia earlier this year, I said to you earlier, we'd done it previously 14 years ago. So I'm sort of revisiting not necessarily the same production, but a one-woman show. And I had to gird my loins because it is the machinery that goes into a one-woman show is extreme. So,
as you said, the concentration and all that, because you don't have anyone to play off. Mm-mm. You don't have any kind of, I don't know what to say, sort of a
center.
Well, center, exactly.
You don't have a reference point, you know, except your own and the one you're giving yourself. And in fact, Alan gave us, he's kind of made everything bulletproof so that if something does happen, my wonderful stage manageress, Kiandri van Wyk, who obviously sits at the back and she does, you know, the cues and is involved with lighting and pretty much everything else. Mm-hmm. But Alan said, you know, if it happens that you just go, for whatever reason, just one of the characters, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but one of the characters is somebody called Sylvie. And he's just said to me, say, where am I, Sylvie? And she'll say, your age. And it'll get me back.
And has that happened yet?
It happened once.
And did you do that?
We did it. And people didn't know. They thought I was talking to Sylvie. It was fantastic. And then never again did it happen.
And when you mention the name Alan, it's Alan Committee, isn't it? You're being directed by Alan Committee.
Alan Committee.
The great Alan Committee, may I say.
Absolutely.
Did you see him in Amadeus by any chance?
I didn't. And I was working.
He was so good.
And I really, that was one of the productions that I wished I'd seen him in.
What was it like working with him? You have to be honest. I mean, I'm sure you're going to be nice.
Yeah, but no, I learned an extraordinary amount from him.
Really?
And I knew I would. But he has an energy that is, I don't quite know how to describe it. You know, he'd sort of get up and kind of say to me, okay, Kate, you know, what you need in this at this point is, and he'd sort of perform, you know, the entire sequence. And I'd think, yes, that can work. And then having to do it myself was an entirely
realizing
different.
It's not that easy. Yeah.
No, exactly. So he does make things look incredibly easy. Mm-hmm. He has this larger than life, obviously, as a comedian, but his observation of life is obviously very particular. He's very funny. He has a razor-like sense of timing. And so I think you know, for him to sort of translate that to somebody else is tricky. And we had copious amounts of notes and, you know, and great laughs. That was one thing. As the time grew closer to opening, we were shaving closer to what needed to be done, you know, the stakes got a bit higher. But I am so grateful for this time. And, without sort of sounding cheesy, I've learned an enormous amount.
Which is saying something, Kate, because of your career and the many people and directors you've worked with over the years. So that's a huge compliment to Alan, isn't it?
Absolutely.
They describe it as a sort of tragedy comic. So did Alan help bring out the comic side as well as the tragic side? Because we saw him in that serious play, Amadeus. Mm. And I thought, how could he possibly play a Salieri? Mm. And he did it so brilliantly, but it was absolutely serious. Mm. There was not a moment where he lapsed into comedy.
No. And I think anyone who can do comedy is more likely going to be able to do tragedy, because comedy is one of the hardest things to do. So if you're able to do that, you will certainly be able to do tragedy.
How do you
tragedy.
Handle the comedy in this play? Well, you've got Anna to help you.
You know, the writing, and I was going to say to you, the writing is quite extraordinary, and I'm a great admirer of Geraldine Aaron's work, and certainly this piece it's filled with compassionate humor, which for me is the best. She is wry and dry and enormously funny, but she's very compassionate, but never in a sort of sanctimonious or sentimental way. You know, this character laughs at herself, which I think makes her so appealing and makes the situation so relatable, whether you've been divorced or married or not, or in a relationship that hasn't worked out. I think it's hugely relatable to most people out there.
Well, I want to talk to you more about her, Geraldine, as well as the various characters you play, as we said, without giving too much away. But let's take your first piece of music, which I see the group 10cc, I'm Not in Love. Mm. Tell me why this has appeared on your list.
I'd been watching it with my brother-in-law. I'd been watching a video of it the other night. And it was revealed to me how they had constructed this sort of wall of voices and the harmonies that feature in this particular number. And I grew up with this song. I think it was done in the 70s. But it is such a lyrical and beautiful piece. And I realized how they achieved the sound effect, which was hugely unusual. Each one of the band members recorded notes, which they then doubled up until they had about 600 voices. So it was basically a choral work. And then they manipulated the notes to fit into the chords of the piece. And as you will hear from the recording, it was a hugely innovative manner in which to do this at the time, even. And they did it, perhaps in a more convoluted way than might be achieved today.
Today, yes, yes.
But the effect was astonishing, and the sentiments are very relatable to the play. I'm not
listen.
In love.
I'm not over the...
It's just a silly phase I'm going through. And just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love, no, no.
It's because belongs to God.
Was the group 10cc, I'm Not in Love, and I hope you listened carefully to what Kate told us beforehand about how those harmonies and so on were built. And Kate Normington is my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week. Kate's just arrived in Cape Town and has opened at Theatre on the Bay with Geraldine Aaron's My Brilliant Divorce, a one-woman show. And I mentioned, Kate, just now that I wanted to find out more about the characters, although you did say you don't want to give too much away. How does that work when other characters come in?
Well, I think as Geraldine Aaron had originally envisaged it, they would be voiceovers. And I think traditionally that has always been the way. But Alan said to me right at the outset, Kate, I think you need to do all the voices because he knows that I that's what I do.
Can you do?
And in fact, an old boyfriend of mine, an actor in the industry, said to me before I started dating my husband, he said, because he knew me so well, he said to me, Kate, don't do the voices on the first date, please, because he wanted me to have a chance with this person.
Shame.
But of course, it's my, you know, trademark. So to cut a long story short, Alan wanted me to do all the voiceovers, whether they were men or women. And I think it's kind of worked out great.
And are these people, these voices, yeah, are they friends of your character?
Friends, co-workers.
Okay. Supporting, a support group in a sense.
Supporting roles. And one of my favorites is the mother, who is sort of quite acerbic, but with an enormous heart. And
the mother of the character.
Of the character.
Yeah.
Angela Kennedy Lipsky, and her mother is Irish and is always smoking a cigarette and always has something to say about what's happening.
So the fact that you can do these voices, at least it doesn't mean you've got to do any costume changes. You're
not
just
at all
on the stage all the time, and it's the voice that changes the character.
Absolutely, and Dennis Hutchinson's lighting. So if I go into a phone call with somebody, you immediately know who it's going to be, just in terms of body position.
Yeah.
And
it sounds fascinating, actually.
The only voice, and actually I shouldn't say anything. I can't.
Oh, oh, no.
There is one voice that is different to mine, but you'll see when you come to see it.
Okay, but just on that subject, Kate, is that one of your things, doing voiceover works in different voices and accents?
Yes, I do a variety of them. I'm not always great at the Welsh. I can sort of last about a sentence in, and then I sort of tend to veer towards a Pakistani variation of, yeah.
Give us a voice.
A voice.
Yes. And maybe even from the play, and you don't have to say which character it is.
All right.
Because then when we see it, we'll say, oh, That was the character that Kate mentioned on the program.
All right, here's something that one of the characters says to Angela. He says, now, here's an idea, Marie-Claire. Why don't you nip down to your local hospital and spread a bit of Christmas cheer amongst those poor souls in the geriatric ward? It might take your mind off your own problems, and I'd feel happier about ending this call if you promised to go and really, really mean it, Marie-Claire.
Thank you, Kate. It is a gift. I've all the years in radio and all that, I cannot do accents or different voices. Some people, as you've just demonstrated, can do it so brilliantly that it's quite frightening how they can become
change
completely
in front of your eyes
just with a voice,
yeah,
without any costumes or makeup or anything like that.
No, it's bizarre, isn't it?
And I remember just going off the track, Peter Dirk Ace.
Yes.
When he came in for me to interview him as Evita Bezuidenhout.
Yes.
Not as Peter Dirk Ace.
Yes.
What he did was he brought a blouse and he did her face.
Yes.
And put a stole around. The rest was just him.
Yes.
And it made the world of difference for me.
Yes.
Because I was now interviewing
Evita.
I wasn't interviewing Peter,
no,
pretending to be Evita. And so that's the other thing. That's why it's interesting that you do these voices without having to change costumes or anything.
It's a stamp. And if you find a way in, and anybody is sort of teaching an accent, will say find a line that leads you into it. Say, for instance, the Welsh accent. Just something like, oh, wildest Wales, or something like that. And you may not be able to make it past Wales, but it gives you an insight. It's a portal that you open, and mm-hmm. whether it's a hat or a tone, a pitch.
That's very interesting.
People will then relate to
how you do you do the male accent? Is that, I mean, people obviously know you're a woman doing it, but do we in the audience get the feel that this is a man?
Yes.
Audiences
will take that leap with you mm-hmm. if you are committed to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, depending on the name, you know, if you say your name is Warren and, you know, you give him a tone, they will accept it. It's amazing, but they do.
The audiences, yes.
As long as you're not uncertain and you commit to your interpretation, they will go with you.
Uh-huh. Do you ever get lost as to which character it might be or which voice? Or not?
Touch wood, not yet.
Okay.
Touch wood.
And I see, just talking about getting lost, and it's a play that runs for about 85 minutes, isn't it, without an interval. So you've got us locked in.
Absolutely.
And sort of riveted, hopefully.
An hour and a half, yeah.
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 Do you prefer that rather than breaking with an interval?
No, sorry, we do have an interval.
Oh, do you?
We
okay.
do. As far as I know, Cape Town hasn't changed, but
okay.
No, there is a short break, and then we run to the end. And
is that break important for you as well?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I can catch my breath.
Yes, I'm sure. And now we're going to have another piece of music, Kate.
Yes.
Kate Normington is my guest. All Right Now, Free.
It's what's that? I'm being wild and woolly with this one.
Oh.
It's Paul Rodgers, who was a sort of really extraordinary rock vocalist from the 60s into 70s. And when Free started, they were extraordinarily young. I think 17, 18.
Oh, as young as that. Really?
And they were already fully formed when they hit the scene. And this is one of their kind of apocryphal songs. Is that the right word to use?
Why not? Even if it's not, it sounds good.
It's just extraordinarily good. And this mm-hmm. guy's voice is one of my favorite rock voices of all time.
Let's move before they raise the parking rate. Oh!
The group is called Free, is it, Kate?
Yes.
And the song that we've just heard is called All Right Now.
Yeah.
Kate Normington is my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week. Kate is appearing at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay in Geraldine Aaron's My Brilliant Divorce. It's an interesting title. It's a little bit provocative, actually, because immediately you think,
this is going to be dreadfully unhappy and sort of somber.
Yes.
And it's anything but.
And it also sounds as though the character's Angela, is it? Your
yes,
character.
Yes.
My Brilliant Divorce makes it sound as though she's really rather thrilled that she's divorced.
Absolutely.
And am I allowed to say that part?
Yes. And we never know entirely throughout the piece how she is feeling about it.
Oh, really?
So
not even at the end?
Oh, we know at the end.
Okay. How does it end? No, you're not to tell.
No.
Absolutely. One of the questions I wanted to ask you just on divorce and all that was, because, of course, divorce is a tremendously
traumatic
experience for many people. Funnily enough, for some it doesn't seem to be, but for many people it's very traumatic.
Yes.
And if you're doing it with the skill and finesse that you said comes with this play, does your husband come and see it? And we must think, gosh,
there's
I hope
a
we
funny,
never get divorced.
There's a funny story around that, Rodney, because the build-up to our rehearsal, I learnt the words. It's a 36-page piece, and it's very dense. And I started learning it long before Alan and I started rehearsals so that I'd be ready. And I'd sort of fall upon my husband, or, you know, we'd pass you know, in the lounge, and then I'd sort of say, I'd start with a piece from the play, and he wouldn't know initially what I was doing because I'd ambush him, and then once he realized that I was testing him out, he'd say, no, Kate, no, I don't have the broadband for this, you know, no, and then I'd ambush him just as we were about to go to sleep, you know, at his most vulnerable, and I'd start in with some lines, and he'd say, no, Katie, I can't, I'm going to sleep now. So when he eventually sees the entire piece, I think he'll, you know, he'll be quite well versed with it.
Has he not seen it yet?
No.
Oh.
But he will. He'll be seeing it soon. He'll be seeing it soon.
Are you based in Cape Town?
We are based in Cape Town.
Oh, so that's why he hasn't seen it. He
didn't go up to Joburg. Yes, because we started up in Joburg. So, okay. Yeah.
So you must be rather excited and apprehensive about him seeing all these lines that you whispered in his ear coming out.
He's a terrible audience member because he always watches me with some sort of... sometimes he looks confused, sometimes he looks amazed, and I'm never entirely sure if he's ever enjoying himself. So I'd rather not look at Saul while I'm performing.
But does he give you a little quit afterwards, perhaps?
Yes, he's always quite considered and kind, but he's often quite observant and insightful, so I do listen to him.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's good. That's good. And, you know, and the other thing you said, it's a 36-page book, this play.
And quite dense.
And dense, exactly. And I've asked so many actors over the years of this program, how do you learn all those words, all those lines? Some people have interesting... You know,
I'm interested to know what you've heard.
Well, Marcel Mayer talks about Shakespeare's not parameter, but that's
iambic pentameter.
That's and how that helps him. The rhythm helps him to get the words right.
Very much.
And so now with you on your own,
there is a different.
There must be a different rhythm.
There is.
As we said earlier, you don't have anyone to play off, so the rhythm of the way you learn your words must be different.
And is
personal
based on
unique.
Her style and her sensibilities. And I mean Geraldine Aaron. Mm-hmm. And because the humor is very specific and the timing of it is very Eurocentric, it's very English, that makes it easier because there is obviously an obvious delivery that goes with that.
Yes.
And there is, you know, she makes a great deal of sense, so there is a flow and rhythm to it that makes sense to me, thankfully.
Which therefore makes it easier to learn through.
Very much.
But it must be such a thing. I remember an actor, and I have a feeling it was either Graham Hopkins or Michael Richards, said they go for long walks with the book, with the text, and, you know, a long walk and just repeat and repeat.
Repetition,
yeah.
Until you find the sense, and then you can give it more rhythm and sense, as long as you kind of get yourself physically. It's almost like a workout, really.
Really? You know, a physical workout,
yeah, so that it's muscularly in your body, and then it's tripping off your tongue, and it's in you.
Pianists say that, you know. When I've said, how do you remember all those notes for a Rachmaninoff piano concert, for example? And they say it becomes muscular.
Yeah.
You know
your
what
fingers
you need.
Note
your fingers know what to do.
Already.
Yeah.
Even if your head is not there, you're sort of carrying on, you know.
irrevocably, as they say. And tell me, I have to ask you about the dog.
Yes.
Which I was rather astonished to discover is stuffed.
Yes. Axel, but he's so sweet. He lives for me every night. He's such a darling. I think I've anthropomorphized him. And you must tell all the pet lovers out there that, you know, that's not a bad thing. You know, I've not caused him injury.
Right. And so is he just there as a stuffed dog keeping you company? And do you hug him?
I refer to him and I hug him, and he is part of the monologue, very much so. He's our daughter's dog, and she has left him with me for manifold reasons. And if you come to see the play, you'll find out what those reasons are.
Okay, you see, I must be careful. I should say we must be careful not to give away too much, because I didn't realize Angela had a daughter.
Yes.
So I need to know why she still around.
Yes.
I need to know what happened to the husband.
Yes.
And all that's made clear to some extent.
Absolutely.
Is it? You smiling in a mischievous way.
We follow her path very minutely, and we find out what's happening mm-hmm. to her ex through a series of other characters who have insight into his particular relationship with, you know, other people. And so we follow things very closely, and she comments on them.
Yeah. It's sounding more and more fascinating as we go along, by the way. And when you said you absolutely adore Geraldine Aaron's writing, mm-hmm. even in other stuff that she's done, or is this a special one?
I'm now interested to, and once I finish with this run, I'm going to look up one of her other plays. I think it's The Galway Girls or The Galway Sisters. There is another more famous play, Bar and Jer, which was always done at schools when I was younger.
Oh, yes.
So her South African connection is, I think she was married to a South African, or she lived here at one point, and obviously she now lives in London. But
and still alive?
Yes.
Right.
But Barringer is about her brother, I think, who passed away, and I'm not certain of the circumstances, but his name was Barry, and her name is obviously Geraldine, hence Barringer. And that play was often done at schools when I was a kid. But as I say, the Galway Sisters or the Galway Girls is one to look out for.
How did you come about getting this part? I'm always intrigued how...
I think Peter Turin had wanted to do it for a while and had suggested it a couple of years ago. And then because I'd been involved in Damon Galgut's and Sylvain Strikes the Promise, it kind of dissipated, and then he brought it to my attention again and said, let's do it.
And he didn't have to persuade you?
No.
You said, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Against All Odds, Phil Collins. This is a famous Take a Look at Me Now. Even I know this.
It's one of the most beautiful songs. Mm-hmm. It's so lyrical and sort of sad, happy. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, should we? Give it a spin.
Let's give it a spin.
Just let you walk away, just let you leave without a trace. When I stand here taking every breath with you, ooh, you're the only one who really knew me at all. How can you just walk away from me when all I can do is watch you? We shared the laughter and the pain, and even shared the tears. You're the only one who really knew me at all. So take a look at me now. There's just an empty space, and there's nothing left. Coming back to me is against the odds, and that's why.
famous song that from that film, Against All Odds. Phil Collins singing Take a Look at Me Now. And another choice of my guest, Kate Normington, starring in Geraldine Aaron's play My Brilliant Divorce, which has just opened at the Theatre on the Bay. And I need to find out a bit more about you now, Kate. I mean, we know so much about you because you've been around for so long, but quite a... Oh, sorry. Let me put
that
hilarious. Another way.
That's so funny.
No, but it's the thing is you've done such a lot over the period and worked with such famous people. You went to the West End for Sunset Boulevard, and that must have been quite a thing, meeting people like Patti LuPone.
Yeah.
And the other famous people you've worked with.
Yeah. Very briefly with Patti LuPone, because I was then sort of sent back because I didn't have a proper sort of passport.
Oh, really?
And we
oh.
hadn't entered the EU at that point, South Africa. But okay. I eventually went on to get my British passport. It was a sort of convoluted affair because I wasn't entitled to one at that point. So they sent me home, and then I returned to London. Patti LuPone, you know, as you will perhaps have read, had a bit of an acrimonious ending with Lloyd Webber. And he then replaced her, I think, with Betty Buckley. And then, of course, Petula Clark, Rita Moreno went on to play Norma
big,
Desmond.
Big names on huge stage names. With you.
Well, I wasn't there for all of them. I was there for Elaine Page, Betty Buckley, Petula Clark. And who was the last one I was there for? I think it was Petula before I left, and then went into some other shows. But
were you in England for a while?
I was there for 5 years.
Oh,
yeah.
So you worked pretty well all that time.
Yeah, okay. I did a little bit of waitressing as well. But eventually, I toured with Annie for their 21st commemoration.
Oh, like what piece. Character did you play?
Grace. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I worked with Martin Charnon, who actually wrote the lyrics for Annie. Mm-hmm. He's passed away. He was, you know, one of the old enclave with Jerome Kern and that
oh,
group.
Yes,
they were
yes.
all in West Side Story, you know, all the original guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was amazing to work with him.
And you mentioned just now working on Damon Gugget's The Promise.
Yes.
Which was, I remember I had this big problem because I read the book and I was completely fascinated.
Yes.
And couldn't wait for the play. And I got completely confused by the play. And
yes.
I didn't know what was going on, because
yes.
it was a very peculiar, although powerful, production.
Absolutely. And
remind me what role you played?
I played the mother.
Oh, right.
Who passes
right.
away right at the top, but revisits. And then, of course, all of us had to play very many different other characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we alternated, all of us, with
yes.
five or six other characters. But you're right about the play being very different to the novel.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, the characters, and certainly Anton Swart, who was played by Rob van Vuren, is this satellite, or rather, he is the sun, and we all spin around Anton
that's an interesting
Swart.
Way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the play and what Sylvain Strike achieved with this piece was bringing them to the fore, because a lot of the characters, I remember reading Damon Galgett's novel and forgetting who these people were because the narrative thread is so powerful.
Yes.
But what Sylvain did was bring them out and made them each characters that had their own voices. And I think that's why people found it so at odds with the novel, because suddenly
like
they were
yeah.
characters speaking mm-hmm. to you. And you
that's
had a
very
sense.
That's interesting. I wish you told me that before.
Mm.
Well, next time they bring it round.
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean. But also, I remember it was such a surprise seeing a lady as the narrator in the Rocky Horror Show. Wasn't that an
yes.
interesting thing to do?
Yes, and I'm so glad they asked me and gave me a chance at it.
And you were much more involved in the musical, as opposed to the narrator sitting on the side
yes.
or whatever. You strutted across the stage and did all sorts of things.
Yes.
But it was coming back home for you because you had Janet many years ago, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, that's right, with yeah. Craig O'Barney at the Victory Theatre in Johannesburg.
Wow.
And then we toured as well, yeah. Did we bring it here? I think we did bring it to Artscape, one of the theatres.
One of those. There's so many things here that you've done that I am not going to go into because it's going to take too long.
Yeah.
But just want to touch on film and television, which you clearly enjoy as well. And you've worked with people like Rupert Graves.
Oh, my goodness, years ago. With
what was that?
Richard van der Berg. He brought Rupert Graves and Sean Connery's son, Jason Connery, out for a movie called Sheltering Desert. This is about, goodness, about 30 years ago or something. And
you mean you were born then?
It's so extraordinary that you mention those names, because Rupert Graves now plays or played one of the police detectives in Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock Holmes. And then so Rupert Graves went on to do an enormous amount. Mm-hmm. He was in Maurice and more famously in the Cumberbatch television show.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember thinking at the time when he'd come out, I remember thinking this boy is going to go and do extraordinary things.
Did you enjoy working in television?
I do. I love it. I love it. It's a completely different animal.
Yes. And the whole process is so different, isn't it, as well?
It can be mind-numbingly
boring. You've even been in Stephen DeLange.
But it's, you know, when you see the final product, it's always an excitement. Yeah.
Of course.
Film is hurry up and wait.
Yeah, they're famously like the army. And I remember seeing the late, much lamented Maggie Smith being interviewed on the Graham Norton show, and a couple of shows where they asked her if she'd looked at any of the
Downton. She never watched it.
And she said, I didn't watch it.
She doesn't. And she was, I loved her. And her Miss Jean Brodie, the prime.
That was a masterpiece, wasn't it?
But when she does, I've seen something of hers recently, Rodney, where she plays, do you remember a movie called A Private Function with Michael Palin, where he plays a podiatrist?
No, I don't.
They're living in rationed England, which is sort of wartime. When would rationing have been predominant, 30s,
yes,
late 30s.
Early 40s, yes.
And so they get themselves a pig. I don't know what they plan to do with it, but there is a wonderful scene with Maggie Smith and Michael Palin where she says to him, he's off his papers, Michael, and then of course he unleashes the torrent of his inspiration. I'm talking about the pig. Mm-hmm. Releases the torrent of his inspiration on the floor, and what ensues with Maggie Smith and Michael Palin is just comedy gold.
Goodness. What is it called?
A Private Function. You have to watch that.
I must watch that, because I'm a huge Maggie. I mean, do you remember that famous Death on the Nile, where there were Bette Davis and David Niven and Angela Lansbury, and Maggie Smith was the kind of servant to Bette Davis and treated her appallingly.
Yes, that's right.
And then she was also memorably in that hotel in India where she played
the Marigold,
a more common sounding accent, and the Lady in the Van, all these wonderful things.
The Lady in the Van.
And I had a house in Umbria. So you see, I was a great fan. Anyway, we mustn't talk about that.
Yes.
We're supposed to be talking about you. Just before we take our last piece of music, I see that you've released solo albums here. You've just released some solo albums.
These albums were done quite a while ago. But
With you singing.
With me singing and having written, six of the tracks on the one, Mother's Daughter, which is my pride and joy. It was dedicated to my mom, and I wrote six of the numbers for her, and and I think I will probably write some more music this coming year, so that's a good
when you're relaxing after your monologue. Right, and before we take our last piece of music, Kate, what happens after this? You suggested you might be able to relax for a while and write some more songs,
do a bit of writing. It's a sort of hobby of mine. And I always know to be never to take breaks too lightly, because I know something will happen.
Yes.
And I'll be thrown into the midst of the storm again. So I'm going to take a little break after this one.
Good. And Cape Town is your home, isn't it?
You
live down here.
Yeah.
So having done the show up there and tweaked it and all the finesse,
yes,
you've brought it down here and now you can relax at home.
Absolutely. Not relax quite, but yeah, be okay. Home with my cats and my husband.
Yeah. My guest has been Kate Normington. Now, her show, My Brilliant Divorce, is at the Theatre on the Bay. And it's just opened, and it runs until the 16th of November. And as you've heard, it's quite something to go and have a look at. So we'll see you on stage, Kate.
Thank you, Rodney.
And your last piece is by Adele, Someone Like You.
Yes.
Is anything special you want to say about this?
Yes, I'd like to dedicate this to my mama, my mum, because it kind of, the musicality of it has a lot of depth. And so did my mom, and it expresses who she was in musically, certainly. And I think she would like it.
Kate Normington, thank you.
Thank you.
That you're settled down, that you found a girl and you're married now. I heard that your dreams came true. Guess she gave you things I didn't give to you. Shy, ain't like you to hold back or hide from the light. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind. You know how the time flies. Only yesterday was the time of our lives. We were born and raised in a summer haze, bound by the surprise of our glory days. I hate to turn up out of the blue uninvited, but I couldn't stay away. I couldn't fight it. I had hoped you'd see my face and that you'd be reminded that for me it isn't over. Never mind. Nothing compares, no worries or cares, regrets and mistakes, their memories made. Who would have known how bittersweet this would taste? Never. Sometimes it hurts instead. sometimes it hurts instead.
What a sight for my eyes to see you in sleep. Could it stop the sunrise hearing you weep? You're not seen, you're not heard, but I stand by my word. Came 1,000 miles just to catch you while you're smiling. What a day for laughter and walking at night. Me following after your hand holding tight. And the memory stays clear with a song that you hear. If I can but make the words awake the feeling. What a reason for waiting and dreaming of dreams. So he's hoping you're fading impossible schemes that are born in the sight of the wind blowing by, while the dimming light brings the end to a night of love.